Heyo, welcome in. It's The Hours. I'm joined by Tyler. I'm Mark. We're going to talk youth basketball today. A lot of coaches reach out and they're either a youth basketball coach or they have feeder programs for their high school programs. And common questions are, what should skill development look like? What should lock left look like? What should drive in space or race in space look like? Is it even possible to run these things at the youth level? So we'll talk all things youth basketball. Tyler, why don't you kick us off with just your thoughts on maybe how youth basketball would differ from a higher level, maybe high school program?
Well, first off, heyo, where did that one come from? Where did you first
get? Know, I just wanted to bring some energy today, and I felt like a heyo would set the tone, a little high energy, you know?
I do know that. Okay, I like that. I like a little high energy. Well, that's a great place to start. If you're going to be a youth basketball coach, you've got to be high energy. Okay, like there's a demeanor that is required for youth coaching, which is like fun, playful, and high energy. Don't think college professor energy. College professor energy does not work for youth basketball. So that's number one. Most young players don't know anything, but there's three things that they need to know. One, high energy equals high performance. Just teaching a youth basketball player how to positively direct their boundless energy is going to be the first step in success. Step two for a youth basketball player is you have to teach them how to talk. So energy and communication are signs of winning players and winning programs, and no one has taught youth basketball players that yet. And so most youth coaches get it wrong because they're like, oh, I need to teach the fundamentals. And when they're talking about fundamentals, they're talking about physical skills, pivoting, dribbling, passing, shooting, defensive stance, defensive shell. That's how traditional coaches would think of the fundamentals. Whereas I would suggest high energy and effective communication are the framework, the standards of any youth basketball program. Otherwise, anything else you attempt to teach of those physical fundamentals will get lost in the confusion of the players and the lack of time on task because their energy is being misdirected. So though I would say those two pieces, those two pillars of youth basketball, right? Directed energy, high energy, and effective communication. Those two pillars really fall under the umbrella of studentship. Savvy means smart. Savvy means clever. Savvy means learning. And teaching players how to be students of the game by directing their energy and effectively communicating with each other is going to give you compound returns once you do start to develop any physical fundamentals. And so that is where I think any effective youth basketball development should start. That'd be pillar one, all right? Studentship, pillar number one. Pillar number two, principles. So too often, youth players are taught plays rather than how to play, because teaching a youth player how to play with space is hard and frustrating and takes longer. Whereas teaching them a play, which guarantees better spacing, is fast and easier and takes shorter time. And you might actually score, which makes everyone really, really happy. And so I would say sacrificing what you want now for what matters most is essential in youth basketball, is embracing a long-term athletic development model, embracing marathon goals of teaching principles. So what principles are important to teach in youth basketball? Speed, spacing, and matching up. I think that's layer one for youth basketball. Can you get players to play fast in transition, make fast decisions with the basketball, be fast on defense, sprinting to the ball, be fast to rebound? And can you get them to play with speed? That would be one principle of play. Right? That's very, very important. Okay. Second principle of play, understanding space, right? Understanding that space is the oxygen that lets us breathe, understanding how to attack space, understanding how to take away space defensively, right? Last principle of play, can you get matched up on defense? Which is why I hate zone defense. Youth basketball is it doesn't force players to take responsibility and establish dual awareness. Dual awareness is essential no matter what defense they're going to play throughout their career. A dual awareness of, I have this responsibility to guard this player, and I also have this responsibility to keep the ball from scoring. That's the dual awareness that is essential to have a high-level defensive player. So if you can establish those three principles of play after you establish high energy and high communication in youth basketball, you're going to be really, really successful. Okay, here's the third pillar for youth basketball development, right? Number one, studentship, communication, and energy directed in the positive way. Layer two, principles. I think those are the first three principles of play that I would develop in youth basketball player. Not all principles of play, but the first three. And then lastly, the third pillar is player development. Develop individual players more than trying to focus on team success. And as we teach here at Savvy, player development is not just, again, the fundamentals. That's skill development. Player development is when you marry the skills with the reads. That is true player development. And so teaching them not just how to shoot, but when to shoot. That's shot selection. Teaching them not just how to pass, but when to pass. That's making visual reads off of visual cues. Not just teaching them how to help on defense, but when to help on defense. That's player development. So really developing players through reads and small-sided games, I think you would have a beautiful template for a youth development program if that was your start. Mark, what would you change or add to that?
Yeah, I'll just go kind of plus one or just add some thoughts to everything that you said, because I thought it was really good. You started talking about energy, right? We need some energy if we're going to coach youth basketball. I think the biggest impact you can have as a youth basketball coach is just having them fall in love with the game. Like oftentimes you're coaching youth because either you have a son or a daughter on the team or because you just love it. And maybe it's your side job, it's your passion, or maybe you are just a youth basketball coach and that is your job. Biggest impact, have them fall in love with the game. They continue to play, they want to get in the gym, and then they'll have a better experience overall. Second thing I want to touch on is you kind of left off on this one too, is player development. And you started talking about most coaches want to teach fundamentals. Anytime I hear the word fundamentals, I want to put them in air quotes, because anything that can be learned is a skill. And I don't think we should separate any certain skills as fundamentals. It's just like how to play the game, right? So somebody might say dribbling is a fundamental. Well, it's a skill, right? And the reason why I want to differentiate that is when coaches think fundamentals, they think technique and like this very like block training, and it's got to look the exact way that I do it or that I was taught to do it, where biomechanically we are all so different. We're all going to move different. I think we should embrace that more. And you talked about at the youth level, like teaching speed and spacing. At the youth level, if you just get your team to play more aggressive than the other team, you're going to win games. And knowing that you're going to win a lot of games because you're more aggressive, that opens up space for you to develop them as players, which is kind of the last pillar that your principle that you shared with development. You can coach to teach or you can coach to win. I think if you get your team to play really aggressive and you coach to teach the game, you're going to win automatically. I think coaching to win would be, we've got to have these awesome baseline out of bounds plays in, or we have to have these set plays in so we can get a basket here. We can manufacture a shot. I would challenge youth coaches to coach to teach. Teach them the skills. Teach them the actual game, too, I think is a neglected part. The more I've been around youth basketball, the more you understand that players don't know the rules. They don't grow up playing as much basketball as we did. So I think we have to go out of our way to teach them just the basic rules of the game and why things are important. So for instance, okay, I don't know. Maybe this makes sense. Maybe it doesn't. But I have a 15-year-old daughter, and she's starting to drive. And we've been practicing driving around the neighborhood, and we just went on the main roads, like real streets, the other day. And when we get to a stop sign, I routinely have to tell her, keep like, go up more, go up more, so we could actually see if cars are coming. So I finally asked her, why are we stopping at the stop sign? Like, why is there a stop sign right here? And she's like, I don't know, just to get you to stop. I'm like, no. It's because traffic is going the other way. So for you to turn or cross the street, you've got to stop to make sure somebody's not going to, you know, knock you in the next week. So once she understood why she was stopping at the stop sign, I didn't have to tell her to keep moving up, because she knew it was her job to make sure no one's going. To me, that was very like, duh, hello, you're stopping to make sure you don't get hit. But take that approach to in your basketball teaching in youth. If you tell them the why we're doing something, they're going to be able to connect it more.
Coaching my daughter's team this last weekend, we make a shot to go up 2 points with 9.5 seconds left. The other team calls an immediate timeout, right? And we're on defense. And I had verified, you know, the last play that both teams were at 6 fouls with the rules we're playing with. 7th foul, they would be shooting free throws. They were shooting 1-on-1s up here. What I wanted to say in the heat of the moment was, don't foul, which would be similar to move up to the stop sign, right? But instead, what I did say was, should we foul right now or not in the timeout, right? And everyone's like, half of them said, yeah, let's foul them. And half said, no, let's not foul them. I said, okay. I said, what would be a reason not to foul? And then one girl's like, they could shoot free throws. I'm like, do we want them to shoot free throws? They're like, no, we don't want to shoot free throws. I said, you're right. So do we want to foul or not? They said, no, it's not foul. I said, okay, now, do we want them to be able to shoot quickly, or do we want to try to slow them down right now? And they're like, oh, I'm going to slow them down. I'm like, why? Because they only have 9 seconds. I said, so should we pick them up full court, or should we back off a little bit, right? And so that would be an example of teaching concepts instead of just saying, like, don't foul, get back, right? Then they don't learn the concepts. Fortunately, the referees were sitting down checking their cell phones and grabbing a snack during the timeout, so we had plenty of time to talk about these things. But that, I just wanted to give like a very real example of that approach of teaching principles as opposed to just telling them the actions to
do. Yeah, I mean, thank goodness she asked the question of should we foul, because half of them said yes, half of them said no. So the good thing about asking your team questions is that you at least know what they're thinking about, right? We only had to convince half of the team not to foul, right? Because yeah, the other half already said, no, we should not foul.
Well, let me also throw this out. So they didn't score. They actually didn't get a shot off. We won the championship. Every player on our team got a $50 Dick's Sporting Goods gift card for winning the championship. That's so much better than some plastic trophy. So shout out to the league we're in, all leagues. Give them something real as opposed to a little plastic trophy, I would say. Anyway, the parents were very thankful for that. I thought that was cool for somebody that experienced it.
Absolutely. All right. Here's the last thing I will say on teaching youth basketball. Speak in their language as much as you can. I taught a youth basketball team. It was a 5th grade team, and these 5th graders were very inexperienced. A lot of them hadn't played before. So we had 3 stances when we were guarding the ball. The first one was elephant. I wanted them to have a stick hand out, and that was like the trunk of an elephant. Very elementary, I know, but it's like really sticky too. So elephant, stick hand, and then when somebody started dribbling, what happens in youth basketball? We just foul. So we called that airplane. They would put their hands out as wide as they could because they knew what an airplane looked like. And then when somebody picked up their dribble, especially when they were around the rim, we called it skyscraper. They put their hands way up. It's better than saying don't foul, hands up, contest, or don't reach. I could, in the middle of the game, look at a player and say skyscraper, airplane, elephant, and immediately they could connect those dots. We want to really teach in external cues or analogies as much as possible, rather than an internal cue, which would be more technique. People don't respond to internal cues as much as they do to an analogy, a story, or an external cue. So especially at the youth level, we want to use those and use constraints. So last teaching tool for the youth level would be shape the environment, which is fairly easy at the youth level, because I think any constraint that you add is going to have a huge effect, even a bigger effect at the youth level, because they can't gamify the system or try to like figure out the constraint and use that to their advantage. They're just going to take the constraint and it's going to shape the environment for certain skills to emerge. And then just let them explore. I would wait even longer at the youth level before I gave any feedback to anybody, because oftentimes this is the first time they're playing a game or trying a certain skill. Let them have way more discovery time than you would for a more experienced player. And then if you have to teach, but when we teach, again, analogies and external cues, and stay away from as many internal cues as you can.
That's good. I really like that. Okay, so do you want to give us a game of the week that would that we could use at the youth level?
Yeah. All right. So this game of the week is a one-on-one game. That's the reason why I like this one a lot, is because we don't know what type of finish you're going to get. So I probably wouldn't start here with the youth level, but this is one that I would want to progress up to. If I was starting at the youth level, I would create an easy read, right? If you're watching on YouTube, I have a diagram up where we could just say, hey, if we have the paint by ourselves, we're going to finish off 1 foot. If we don't, we're going to finish off 2 feet, and just use those two things as the way we're going to teach finishing. I would separate those things where they're getting two different reads. And then if we just want to train and test really our skill, then we're going to play this game. I don't have a great name for this. We called it one-on-one K-State, probably because we got it from Kansas State. But we have player one who's actually going to be on defense, but they're going to start with the ball, and they're going to be around the nail. Offensive player is going to start around the four-point line, the center court circle. You can manipulate where these players line up depending on what type of advantage you're getting and what type of advantage you want. All right, so to start the play here, player one is going to pass to two, and player one is the defense. They're going to run, touch the sideline. As soon as two gets the ball, they're live. So if one is early, now we're going to have a body in front. If one is kind of late, we're going to have a body on the side. And then if one is really late, we're going to have a body defender behind. So we're going to score off 1 foot. I've got a clip here of it going live. We actually started a little bit different here, so I wanted to show it on diagram first, but this is an example of the game. We have actor versus reactor, and then now we're creating a nice finishing read at the rim where we might, again, you might get a 1 foot finish, you might get a 2 foot finish where you're playing with power and balance, or if defense is really early, you might get a scenario where you have to come up with a counter move like a pro hop or a euro, maybe playing out of a pivot. So I really like this one because we don't have to block what type of finishes we're working. The game, the environment, is going to give us several different types of skills. So why do we do this? To really emphasize our finishing reads and see if players can come up with their own finishing solutions.
You know, I really like it. I want to throw in a fundamental. So I think you can put in any fundamental into any game. So like, for example, here you see there's a little retreat dribble by the offensive player. So let's say that a fundamental that you wanted to work on was between the legs dribble. You could just go 30 seconds between the legs, or to start this game, you could say you have to go between twice, right? Two between the legs dribbles, and then you play out of it. Or let's say you wanted to work on passing, right? You could just actually trigger it by a pass to the coach, then they pass back, and then you attack. And we're focusing on a one-hand push pass. So like any fundamental that you value, any fundamental skill, you can actually just layer into any game that you're doing. And you'll get more time on task as opposed to, you know, just getting a fundamental that won't actually transfer to a game. So if you want them to like get reps at something like a pivot, whatever, right? Just layer it into a game as a start or a stop, as a way to get it at the beginning or end of the game. You'll get more energy and you'll allow for the communication we talked about, for the reminders. I mean, another really simple one is, let's say you want to work on stride stops. Okay, play this game, and every time that they have to get to a spot, they stride stop. So as the defender's running to the nail to start, have them just run and stride stop. as the ball handler's getting to their, you know, to the center circle to start, have them get the ball, run there and stride stop. So you can put any technique that you want or any physical movement that you want into how you actually flow into and out of a live game rep. And I think that's going to be more beneficial over time than just doing block practice of your fundamentals.
Yeah. I mean, what you just did there is a sign of a master coach, is like, you can connect the block practice that we do to the game. So you're adding context to the game. Here's another way that we've done that. And you could certainly do it in this game as well. Let's say you want to do some dribbling drills or ball handling drills, and you're working on between the legs. That's the example you gave. Then you could just play live one-on-one and say you have to go between the legs before you score. So now you're going to teach a player to manipulate their defender. Well, if I attack to my left and they cut me off, now I can counter with between the legs and get to my right hand. So that's probably going to be really messy because, you know, players are going to try to figure something out. They're going to explore, they're going to experiment, but that's what we want at practice. And that's what we mean by messy wins, is allow that messiness to happen, because when messy happens, it means that learning and growth is taking place. So we got to embrace that. So yeah, that's a really good tweak off that one. And a sign of a master coach, a master coach is one that can master their environment, where it might not look super clean, but they know that learning is taking place because they're shaping that learning.
Beautiful. And I think that connects to our teach better. That is our teach better segment. It's a way to shape environments to teach whatever skill you want within the context of your game. So Mark, great question and great topic on how to develop youth basketball players, which is an absolute passion of mine. So I'm excited for all of you. If you are a youth basketball coach, a great place for you to start your coaching journey is in our free community. Join over 2,500 other coaches. Go to savvyfree.com, click the link in the description below, and you can get free resources. And I hope that you go deeper. If you do have a desire to go deeper, you can check out our paid courses for youth basketball development as well.
In those paid courses, like if you buy the Race and Space system or the Lock Left system, it's layered out in layers 1 through 10, where if I was a youth basketball coach, I'm going to start at layer 1. And when my group is ready for layer 2, I introduce layer 2. And that might be all we get to in our first season together. Maybe you get to layer 3, but you know exactly where your team can get to and then where you would start next season as well. So everything's laid out for you. We believe in our systems. And if you join our paid community, you get a 30-day money-back guarantee. So I always encourage people to spend 30 days with us. You spend less money on a system, and you get the entire Savvy Classroom of resources available to you. So thanks for spending this time with us. I'm Mark. He's Tyler. Together, we're Savvy Coaching. As always, stay savvy.